Masechet Baba Metziah Daf Dalet. So far, we talked about whether there's one or two cases in the Mishnah, concluded that this is talking about two cases, finding and buying. And then we spoke about who is the author, or rather, who is not the author. And we showed that it can be Ben Anas Sumchos, and it can also be reconciled with Rabbi Yoseh. And now we're in the middle of dealing with Rabbi Chiya's law. Rabbi Chiya says that just like Modeh B'Miksat, if someone confesses that he owes part of a claim, then he has to pay that, what he confesses, and he has to make an oath regarding the remainder of the claim that he does not owe it. So too, if someone denies an entire claim, let's say $100, and then two witnesses come and say, actually, you owe part of it, he has to make an oath regarding the other part. That's Rabbi Chiya's law, that you have to make an oath also regarding two witnesses that come, and not only modeh b'miksat, not only confession. Now, Rabbi Chiya, there were two things attached to his law. One is Rabbi Chiya himself says, I learned this from a kal vachomer. And the other is that the Gemara says this, there's an analogy to the garment case in our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah also there's a partial payment, a partial claim, partial payment, somewhat of a proof by holding on to it, and there is a requirement of an oath. And so therefore the requirement of the oath in Rabbi Chiya's case is similar to the oath requirement in our Mishnah. All right, so now, right now, we're in the middle of dealing with this kal vachomer, and we tried a number of ways to bring a kal vachomer from confession, that if you have to make an oath when you're confessing, all the more so you have to make an oath if two witnesses come and say that you have to pay part of it. However, we ended up rejecting this because witnesses can be contradicted by a second set of witnesses. Let's say they were oppose them or are edim, say that they are edim zomimin. Not so with confession. Confession cannot be opposed by a set of witnesses, and therefore you cannot compare them. And so now we're stuck. We don't know what Rabbi Chiya's kal vachomer was. Instead, what we're going to do right now is say, maybe actually his kal vachomer was not from confession, but rather a kal vachomer from one witness who does require someone to make an oath. We're going to show that that alone also is not sufficient, but then we'll put them together. We can make a joint kal vachomer called amem asinu. If we combine the various aspects of confession and one witness together, they are a sufficient kal vachomer to teach us that one has to make an oath also when two witnesses come and say you have to pay part of something. Okay, that'll conclude that. We'll have a successful kal vachomer. But then we're going to turn and question this analogy itself and say, actually, the analogy from our Mishnah to this is not very strong, and therefore we're actually going to apply the analogy to a different statement of Rabbi Chiya, a different halakha of his altogether. All right, so let's get started. Ela atya me'ayad echad. The kal vachomer that Rabbi Chiya was talking about was not based on the vow that modeh b'miksat has to make, and therefore, just like if modeh b'miksat, when someone confesses, has to make an oath, all the more so if two witnesses come and say you have to pay part of it, you have to make an oath. No, that wasn't the kal vachomer, but rather from the case of one witness. If one witness comes and says that you owe $100, that one witness cannot make you pay. One witness is not sufficient. However, if I come with one witness and make a claim against you and say you have to pay me $100, you will be required to make an oath that you don't have to pay. So one witness, although does not make someone pay, requires someone to make an oath. Then two witnesses that require someone to make to pay, right? Two witnesses. I have two witnesses that say you owe me $100. Then you really have to pay. Then all the more so, two witnesses that come in a miksat case, two witnesses say that you have to pay part of what I claim. Certainly, they will have the power to make you take an oath on the other part that you denied. All right, that seems like a good kal vachomer, but we reject. It's not quite the same. When one witness comes and says that you owe me $100, so You have to make a vow about that very claim that the witness has said and counter it and says, I make a vow. No, I don't owe $100. So there, the witness testimony and the vow are about the very same subject. But you want to try to apply that to a case of two witnesses that come and say, you owe part of it. And that will make you take an oath on the other part that you deny. The part that the witnesses talk about, that $50, certainly you have to pay. There's two witnesses. And you want to say that then you have to take an oath on the other part that you denied. But that's not the same as one witness where the testimony and the vow are about the same subject. Here, the testimony of the two witnesses and the vow are about different parts of the claim. So that's not the same. Ela amar Rapapa, atem migilgul shibu'ah de'ed echad. Rapapa says the Kav HaChomer is based on the extension of an oath or the rolling of an oath, literally. And this is an interesting halakha that says, let's say I have one witness and it claims that you have that you owe me $100. You deny it, and I say, well, and then you have to make an oath. Here's the law. Since I'm making you take an oath about this, and you have to take an oath, while I'm at it, I can throw in other oaths about other cases altogether, nothing related to this, but we have another dispute about some land thing or something that you bought or that I sold you. And in such a case, you would not have to take an oath normally. But now, since you have to take an oath regarding this law, because I have one witness, I say, while you're at it, take other oaths as well. The Papa says that's where the Kav HaChomer is from. And here it is analogous because of my one witness, you have to take an oath on other things, not that my witness said, but other matters. So too, two witnesses is more powerful than one witness. So two witnesses also should require you, by saying that you owe part of it, they should require you to make an oath on the other part. All right, that's the Kav HaChomer. But we reject Ma'ale Gilgul Shivua De'ed Echad, Sheken Shivua Goreret Shivua. Tomar Be'edim De'mamon Kameh Chayibeh. No, it's still not the same regarding the oath that one witness prompts. It's the oath itself that prompts more oaths. So once you're taking an oath anyway, so take more oaths. But the witnesses require you to pay. So then, how can you just go and add in an oath based on payment? That's not the same as, you know, when you're saying, while you're at it, and you're saying one oath, you may as well make another oath. That's not the same as saying, well, while you're at it paying, then you should make an oath. That's a jump. And that's not a warranted jump. So there is no logic here. So we cannot, therefore, make a Kav HaChomer just from the case of one witness. So then we say, wait a second, let's bring back in the confession. Piv yochiach malefiv sheken eno behachasha. So let's bring in the confession. So can we make a Kav HaChomer from confession as we tried to yesterday? No, we already rejected that because confession cannot be contradicted by witnesses. That's why we rejected it yesterday. But now we'll bring in Aydechad Yochiach Sheyeshno Bechachasha Umechayavo Shivua. So let's bring in the case of one witness where one witness can be rejected. Right? If I bring one witness that you owe $100 and you bring another witness or witnesses that say not, then you don't have to make, then you're exempt from making a Shivua. So here, one witness where there is a possibility of contradiction, and yet one witness does require an oath. So the fact that that a confession cannot be contradicted, that's not a significant point because one witness can be contradicted and requires a shivua. So with one witness will prove that the lack of contradictability of confession is not a significant factor. But the problem is with edechad, mele edechad sheken amas shime idu nishpa, toma bedim shalmahu mashe kafar hu nishpa. But the problem with bringing in one witness is, as we just said, where one witness makes you take an oath on the very same matter that he testified about. Witness testified, you owe $100, you deny, and take an oath, no, I don't owe you $100. And that's not comparable to a case of two witnesses where where what we were trying to apply to witnesses to, where the witnesses say you owe part of it, and then you have to vow the other part, and that's not the same. But then, well, you know what? We'll bring back confession, pivyochiach, because with confession, you admit to part of it, and then you take an oath on the other part. So you see that you still have to take an oath, even though the confession applies not to the same thing that you're taking the oath on. And so that shows that that by itself is not a significant factor. So now each one by itself has a weakness, but what if we bring both of these together? Ah, v'chazad hadin. So this is going to go round and round unless we bring them together. Lo de'izeh k'de'izeh, v'lo de'izeh k'de'izeh. The particular aspects of confession are not the same as the particular aspects of one witness, and vice versa. Hasad ha'shaveh shebehen, the common denominator between confession and one witness is shal yedeh ta'ana uchvira hen ba'in v'nishba, that through a claim and a denial, right, in both cases, I make a claim against you, you deny it, and then because of either confession, because you confessed for part of it, you have to make a vow, or because of one witness that came and said you owe it, and then and you denied it, and then you have to make a vow. So in both of these cases, there is a prompt of a vow, and the particulars of these, right, to cancel each other out, because you show that it really doesn't matter, and you have to take a vow even in a case where it can be contradicted. You have to make a vow even in a case where the vow is not the very same thing that was being said by the confession. And so since the particulars cancel each other out, and we bring both of these cases together, fani abi edim she'al yedeh ta'ana uchvira hem ba'in v'nishba, so I can bring both of these as a basis for a kavah chomer to two witnesses, where also here, through a claim and a denial, the two witnesses come and say, wait, but you denied the whole thing, but we know that you owe at least half of it, so you should be required to make a vow on the other half that you denied, which is exactly to be Chiyah's law. So we have a good Kal Vachomer, right? Almost. Wait, there is a common denominator between those two, that the person will not be considered a denier, meaning untrustworthy, a false witness, and not reliable to take an oath. In those two cases, if someone first denies and then confesses to part of it, so he confessed, he's not considered untrustworthy. After all, he confessed. It's actually good. It shows that he is trustworthy. And similarly, one witness is not going to be sufficient to make someone untrustworthy. So that in those two cases, it makes sense that to say that they're still trustworthy, and therefore they have to make a vow. Whereas in the case of the two witnesses, right, again, I say you owe $100, you deny the whole thing. Witnesses come and say you owe at least 50. So now the witnesses just prove that you are a liar. So now once you are established as a kafran, as a liar, now we're going to make you take an oath. Your oath is worthless. You can't be a witness from now on, and your oath is worthless anyway. So it doesn't make sense to prove from two cases that do not make you into a liar, and prove that, those two you have to make a vow. That cannot be proof for when witnesses come. When two witnesses come, that's outside evidence that you had been lying. If you confessed it to yourself, you're not a liar. If other people confess it, one witness is also not sufficient. Two witnesses say you're a liar, so that's a completely different case. How could you prove from there that then you would have to now take a vow? And we answer, wait a second, there's a problem with your question. Is that true that two witnesses that come and testify that someone was lying, does that mean that that's it? They can no longer be testify or make a vow anymore. In fact, that law depends on which case it is. If someone denies a loan, then they can still be a valid witness, because we assume they really weren't trying to totally lie and get out of paying. They were just trying to buy time. And they said, no, I don't owe. They swear that I don't owe. it's a false swear, it's true, but the person is actually still, we consider them ultimately trustworthy because we think that this is what, you know, some people do. They say, I swear, really they're going to pay it back. They just need an extra month to get the money together. But they really weren't trying to steal. Whereas if I give you something to as a deposit, hold on to this item for me, hold, right, watch it for me. And then I come and say, okay, I want it back. And you make a vow. Oh, I don't have it. You never gave me anything. Well, that there's no buy. Well, you're not buying time because you either have the item or you don't have the item. It's not like money where I give you a loan. Everyone expects that you're going to take the money and spend it. You're not going to ever give back the same money. So there, it makes sense to say that you need more time. You really weren't trying to steal. Whereas a pikadon, if you deny that you have the item that I deposited with you, then obviously you're just trying to steal it. And so in that case, that guy is a rasha and cannot testify. But in this case, where he's only denying a loan, so we don't call him kafran. He's not a liar. He's not a rasha. He's not a thief. And he can, in fact, make a vow. So that kal vachomer is good. We have one last challenge to this joint kal vachomer, also called memasinu. Ela parich achi ma lesad hashaveh shebehen sheken enan betorat hazama toma beadim sheyeshtam betorat hazama. Those two sources that you brought the kal vachomer for, in neither case can you bring edim zomemin. How so? When someone confesses, edim zomemin are not valid. If I confess that I owe you $100, right, and I give the details and I confess to myself, even if two witnesses come and say I was in a different country that whole time, it doesn't matter. The two witnesses don't affect anything. And also with one witness comes and then two witnesses come and say, you're with us in a different country or anything like that, that one witness will not become an ed zomem. There's no such thing as an ed zomem for one witness. One of the reasons is because an ed zomem only cannot make someone pay, but can only make someone take a vow. Edim zomemin, mizimim, don't make a vow. You can't say, well, since you were going to make someone make a vow, then you have to make that vow, right? That you can't apply that to the edim mizimim. Okay, anyway, so there's no law of hazama in the source cases. Now, so therefore we cannot bring that as a proof to the case of two witnesses, because two witnesses can be found to be edim zomemin. And so does that not destroy the kal vachomer? We answer, no. Halakashya rebichia, torat hazama la parich, rebichia is not bothered by this question, that this problem from the laws of hazama. Maybe because, as we just said, when one ed, it's not that the law of edim zomemin doesn't apply at all. It's just that he can't make anybody give, he can't give anybody capital punishment or pay. It's just a vow, and just for technical reasons, you can't apply the vow there. But that's not a fundamental reason to break the kal vachomer. So Rabbi Chiya doesn't see any fundamental difference between the sources of the kal vachomer and the target, which is edim zomemin. And just because there is this incidental difference, but it's not a significant one, it's not something that's essential to the argument, and therefore the Bichiyah does not take into account. And finally, the kal vachomer stands. So with all that work, let's review where we are. The Bichiyah said this law. And he said, I learned it from a kal vachomer. We tried to bring it from confession alone, from one witness alone, but each one had a weakness. But when we bring them together, as a mem asinu, the common denominator between the two is sufficient to make a kal vachomer support Rabbi Chiya's law. Great, success. Now we're going to attack this part, the analogy to our Mishnah regarding Shnayim Ohazin, and we're going to show that this analogy is not quite so strong. Ela dekamar v'tana tuna midameh. When the Gemara, this wasn't the Bichiyah's words himself, it's an opinion, so a voice in the Gemara said that our Mishnah teaches the same law. But is that really the same? Hatam la malve it le sahade, la love let le sahade, de la masik le vela midi, di havu le sahade la love, de la masik le vela midi, la ba erbi chia lishta li ish tabue. In the case that Rabbi Chiya brought, the malve, the one making the claim, he has two witnesses, right? That's Bichiyah's law, and two witnesses come and say, you owe half of it. at least. You are at least 50. And the loveh has no witnesses at all, no witnesses to say that I don't know anything. Because if the loveh had witnesses that he owes nothing, then Rabbi Chiya would not make him take an oath. So you see, in that case, one side has two witnesses, the other side has zero. That's not the same as Anarishna. Hacha ki hechi da'anan sahadeh behai, anan sahadeh behai, v'afilu hachi mishtabe'e. In the case of our Mishnah, we said since one of the claimants is holding on to half of the garment, that is anan sahadeh. That's like witnesses. We testify that that's a proper claim to at least that half. And therefore, that's like witnesses that come and say, yes, you owe at least half. And you see, the other side has to take a vow. Yeah, but in this case, the other side, the defendant, is holding on to half. And so you should apply the anan sahadeh also to his half and make that like that as if he has also witnesses that that half belongs to him. In other words, our Mishnah, where each of them is holding part of the garment, would be, if you assume that holding a garment is like having witnesses, fine, let's take the analogy all the way to the end, and that would be the same as if I have two witnesses that you owe me 50, and you have two witnesses that you can keep that 50 and don't owe the 50. So then you would not have to make a vow since you have witnesses. And nevertheless, our Mishnah says that there is a vow. So you see that our Mishnah is not comparable to the case of Rabbi Chiya, and therefore this analogy is not good. So whoever made that analogy must have meant something else. Rather, whoever said, and the Mishnah says so also to support Rabbi Chiya, it could be that the original statement of whoever said that was, our Mishnah supports the law of Rabbi Chiya. But Rabbi Chiya said many things, and in fact was not that law that we just mentioned of two witnesses that say you have to pay part of it, but rather a different statement of Rabbi Chiya altogether. Damar Rabbi Chiya, Maneli biadcha, v'hala omer, en lecha biadi, ela hamishim zuz, v'helach chayav. Rabbi Chiya said the following scenario. I come and say, you owe me $100, right? I lent it to you. And then you, the loveh says, no, I only owe you 50, and here it is. And you hand it over to me, right, and put it in my hand right there and then. So in that case, one might have thought, and we're going to see this opinion in a second, one might have thought that since you're already giving it to me in my hand, so now it's like that is finished. We put that off the table, and now you're denying the entire claim because the 50 that I claimed is already paid, it's already in my hands. And so in that case, you might think that that's someone who's denying the entire amount, and you would not have to make a vow. So the Bichia comes to say, not so. We consider this also like modeh b'miksat, even though he's paying that half right away, still, from the beginning, the claim was for the entire amount, for 100, and even though you just paid 50, still, we consider that modeh b'miksat, and you have to make a vow. My ta'ama, helach nami kemodeh b'miksat ta'ana adameh. Why does Bichia say that? Because he thinks, even if helach, even if you give the money right there and then, with no time to for the claim to so-called be activated or recorded, it's already paid. Nevertheless, that's still modeh b'miksat because the claim was 100, and now you paid 50. Thank you for your payment, but you still denied the other part of it. V'tana tuna shenai mochazim betalit. It's about this law that the Gemara, the author of that statement, said. Our Mishnah is a proof to it, right? Because here we have Shtayim Ochazim B'Talit. How is it the same case? It is similar. Watch like this. I come and claim, hey, this talit is all mine, and I have proof, in fact, that half of it is mine because I'm holding on to it, and that's called Anan Sahadeh. Okay, good. Now, you come and claim that the whole thing is yours. Now, since I'm already holding on to it, holding on to half of it, I already have it, that is the same as helach. That's the same as you putting $50 in my hands right up front. In fact, over here, we're actually walking into court, and I already have half of it, and I'm claiming the whole thing. I already have half of it. So really, you might say here that I'm only claiming the other half, the part that you're holding, and you deny that entire part of it. So you might say that this is denying the entirety, but no, we don't say that. We still consider this as modeh b'miksat, even though I'm holding on to the other half. That's the proof for Rabbi Chiya's second law here, that even if you pay me right there and then 50, still, since the initial claim was for the entire thing, even though I have the 50 in my hands already, still we look at the initial claim and we consider it a modem miksat. And so these cases are, in fact, analogous. That's what we're applying. The Tana Tuna is to this case of Rabbi Chiya. Good. Rav Sheshat Amar, Helach Patur. Rav Sheshat is the one that disagrees with Rabbi Chiya. And he says, if you pay immediately, that's called helach, then you don't have to make a vow. That's not considered modeh b'miksat. That's considered denying the entire thing, because we only look at what's left after the payment, since I already have the payment and that's finished. My ta'ama, kivan d'amar lehelach, hanezuze, dekam modeh begavaihu, kiman d'naket lehu malveh dameh, b'ina chamishim halo modeh, hilkach leka hoda'at miksat ta'ana. The reason is, as we just explained, since the loveh said here, they're right, your money is right here, so that money that he paid and that he admitted to, it's as if the malveh already has it. It's as if he already took it. It's in his possession. So therefore, the only part in dispute is the other 50. And the other 50, the loveh entirely denies. So that's a total denial. In a case of total denial, as we said yesterday, one does not have to make a vow. If I come to a random person in the street, random person comes, says, or if we know each other, doesn't matter. I come and say, you owe me $100. And I have no proof. I have no witnesses or anything. So you just say, goodbye. You bring proof. You don't have to swear. You don't have to do anything. And so this is the same. This is a denial of the entirety. And that's why there is no, it's not modeh b'miksat, because it's as if the malveh already has that 50, and so you are denying the entire thing. So that's Rav Sheshat, who disagrees with Rabbi Chiya. Now we're going to turn our attention to Rav Sheshat. Rav Sheshat, Kashya Matnitin. Rabbi Chiya brought an analogy from our Mishnah as a proof. So Rav Sheshat is going to have a challenge from our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, it's like you already gave me half because I'm holding on to the other half of the talit. And yet, you have to make a vow. So how would Rav Sheshat explain that? Amalech Rav Sheshat Matitin Takanat Chachamim Hi. Rav Sheshat says that you're right. From the letter of the law, in the Mishnah, the parties would not have to make a vow because it's like helach. It's like I already have the claim, the half the claim that I have in my hands, and you're denying the entire thing, and you shouldn't have to make a vow. That's true. And the case of the Mishnah is a special ordinance of the Chachamim. They came and said, as we said in the first daf, that the rabbis did not want people going around and grabbing things out of other people's hands. You just pick something up from the floor, and I grab half of it, and then the court's going to give it to me. So the rabbis instituted making a vow to prevent people from doing that. But it's only the Rabbanan, the left from the letter of the law. I would agree. V'idach, and now we turn to the Bichia. What would you say to that answer? He would say, "In takanat chachamim hi." I agree that it's a drabanan shivua. It's only the chachamim that added it. Nevertheless, I still think it's analogous to my case. The Bichia would say. Rabbi Chiya says, still, this is a proof for my law, because if you say that from the Torah law, even though helach, the loveh put the money immediately into the hands of the malveh, and the malveh already has it, if you say that still that doesn't count, that's still called modeh b'miksat, and you have to make a vow, mideoraita, then it makes sense when the rabbis made an ordinance, they looked to that deoraita vow as a model. Because in general, when the rabbis make a law, they don't make something up totally from out of the blue. They usually look to the Torah and they extend or copy a model that's already in the Torah. So then it makes sense that the rabbis would say, you know, listen, this case of the garment is similar. We're going to make a vow here as well. Since the other guy's already holding half of it, it's kind of like helach. Not exactly like it, but it's sufficiently like it to be a model. But if you say, like you, Rav Sheshat, that on a Doraita level, the helach case, one does not have to make a vow because you already got it in your hand and that's considered out of the picture and it's a denial of the entire thing, well then when the rabbis come and make a shivua, they will have no model because from the letter of the law Deoraita, there's no vow. So then there's nothing for the rabbis to copy and it wouldn't make sense to make a vow for the rabbis to impose a vow in the case of the Mishnah, which is a very interesting argument and a good theoretical model to think about various Rabbanans and what the Oraita law the rabbis are using as a model. We now challenge Rabbi Chiya's law, second law, from a Baraita, Me'eti be Sela'im Dinarin. Malve omer chamesh velove omer shalosh. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer ho'il vehoda'a miksata ta'ana yishaba. Rabbi Akiva omer eno ela kemeshiv aveda upatur. The Baraita teaches, let's say someone has an IOU, a loan document that says, you owe me coins, sela'im, dinarim, or dinarim. It doesn't say how many. That's not a very well-written IOU. So what one presumption could be, you owe me coins, maybe it's the minimum that is plural, which is two. But it's not clear. Maybe it means more. So there's two claims. The malveh says, the lender says, I lent you 5 coins. That's what this means here. But the borrower says, no, in fact, you only lent me 3. So, well, how do we deal with this case? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says this is called modeh b'miksat, right? He claimed 5. The other guy, the loveh, admitted 3. That's modeh b'miksat. He admitted to part of it, and therefore he'll have to pay 3, and he'll vow regarding the other 2 that no, you never gave me the other 2. Rabbi Akiva, however, says this is not modeh b'miksat. This is like returning a lost item because from the document itself, since the minimum of plural is 2, the document would seem to indicate by itself that it's only 2. And therefore, the loveh, he easily could have gotten away with just 2. And the fact that he's coming and saying one more than 2, he's in fact saying 3, this is not a normal case of modeh b'miksat. In a normal case of modeh b'miksat, the person is not so brazen to deny the whole thing. But to say half of it is okay. But in this case, a person would be brazen enough to say, I only owe you 2. After all, he has proof in the very document, the very loan document that the malveh brings, says plural, but that probably means 2 only as the minimum of plural. And therefore, when he comes and says, oh, I owe you 3, so he's going like above and beyond expectation. And therefore, we should believe him, and he does not have to make a vow. That's Rabbi Akiva's position. Now, what's the challenge? Katan mihat Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, hoil vehoda miksata ta'ana yishaba, ta'ama adamar shalosh, ha-shetayim patur, v'ha-ishtara ke-deka modebe, helachu shmamina helach patur. The challenge is from the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says that since he admitted to 3, that's modeh b'miksat, and you have to and he has to make an oath. Now we can infer from the fact that he only made his case regarding when the loveh says 3 coins. What if the loveh says, yeah, I agree on 2 coins? Then presumably, according to the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, he would not have to make a vow. That's what the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said, the case of 3, and not the case of 2. According to the case of 2, he would not have to. Now, why wouldn't he have to? Well, look, at this start, the fact that the Malveh has a document that says, you owe me coins, that's the same as helach. When you have a document, that's like it's like a check. You know, you can go and get the money. You have a lien on the person's land. So it's like the money's already in the hands of the Malveh. And so, in the case where he already has the money in the hands of the malveh, and the loveh says, I only owe you, right? I'm denying all of it. I'm agreeing to the two because you will have a document. It's like you already have that. But all the rest of it, the other three coins, he denies completely. And therefore, this is a case of, like, denying the whole thing. And we say that we consider the heilach part out of the picture, already done, like Rav Sheshat says. And so there's a challenge to the Bichiya, because according to the Bichiya, a case of Helach should be Chayav, but here, which is an equivalent to Helach, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Patur. That's the challenge, and we answer, Lo le'olam em alach shetayim chayav, v'ad tekatani shalosh, la'pukeh medribi akiva, damar meshiva avedah haveh patur, kamash malan demodev miksata tahana haveh v'chayav. We're going to reject this inference that you said, that since Rabbi Shimon says, for three you have to make an oath, therefore two you don't have to. Not necessarily. It could be that one has to make an oath, whether the loveh has to make an oath, whether he claimed, I owe you three, or admitted only to two, still has to make an oath. Now, why did he say a case of three? Only because he wanted to reject the Biakiva's position, who says that when it's three, that's like returning a lost item in patur. So that's why the Bishimon says, I disagree with, not only in the case, I would say chayav, not only in two, but even with three. I don't think it's a meshiva veda. And so that's why he said that three also is modev miksat and is liable. We say, if so, if that's really what Rabbi Shimon meant, Yachid Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer ho'il ve'hoda miksat tatani shaba, af ze yishaba mi ba'ele. The language that Rabbi Shimon said, what he actually said is, since he admitted to part of it, he has to make a vow. You should have added, he also in this case, when he admits to three, he also has to make a vow, not only when he admits to two. So it should have said it in that way, if in fact the Bishimon would have said that you have to make a vow when he admits to two or for three. Ela lo'olam shetayim patur ve'helach chayav v'shane hachad kamisaya le'shetara. Rather, the inference that we made above is correct. And according to the Bishimon, if the loveh admits only to two, then he does not have to make a vow. And still, Rabbi Chiya can maintain that a case of heilach is one would be liable to make a vow. And this case is different because the shtad is supporting the loveh. It's like the loveh has witnesses, and that's why he doesn't have to make a vow in this case. So again, to review this case, the malveh says, you owe me five, and I have a document that says coins. And the loveh says, I only owe you two. And in fact, the document that you produced that says coins, since the minimum of a plural is two, is actually a proof to me. So normally, a helach case, I would have to make a vow. And in this case, it is like helach because you already have a document that you can use to collect at any time. But since the document is a proof for me, it's as if I had brought witnesses that I only owe you two, I wouldn't have to make a vow. Your document supports my claim that I only owe you two, and therefore I'm going to be exempt from the vow. That's Rabbi Chiya's thinking. So that's one answer. Iname mishum dehava le shetar sheibud karkaot ve'en nishba'in al kefirat sheibud karkaot. Or another reason why the loveh does not have to make a vow when he says two is because the loan document creates a lien on land. And you never have to make a vow for denial of when it comes to land or a debt that's secured by a lien on land. So that's a general law, and we're going to apply that here. Also, the general law would be like, you know, you claim that I owe you five pieces of land. I say, no, I only owe you three pieces of land. So regarding land or a loan that's secured by land, one does not have to make a vow. So in this case, although only part of it is secured by a vow, the part that I am admitting to is secured by a lien on that land. And therefore, the entire law of Modev Miksat does not apply if even the part that I am admitting to is secured by a lien on the land. And that's why this is an exception to the rule. But otherwise, a normal case of helach, where there's no land involved and no document that makes a lien on the land, one person claims five, and the other person says, no, only two, and here it is, and already pays it, then That is still considered modeh b'miksat, according to Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Shimon, and therefore he would have to pay. Okay, so we resolve the question against Rabbi Chiya from the Rabbi Shimon. However, there's a whole other version of this line of thinking, line of questioning. Ika de motiv mi sefa. There are those who make an objection from the sefa, from Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and now they direct this challenge to Rav Sheshat instead. We're just flipping everything over. As follows, Rabbi Akiva omer, eno ela kemeshiva veda opatur, tama dama shalosh, hashetayim hayav, vashtar kevan de kamode be kehelach dame, shemamina helach hayav. Rabbi Akiva said that when he admits to three, it's like he is returning a lost item. We don't consider it like modeh b'miksat, but he's just he didn't have to admit to the three, and he did. And therefore, we don't make him make a vow. So we can infer from Rabbi Akiva's statement that when does he not have to make a vow when he admitted to three? But let's say he only admitted to two. Then this is not like meshiv aveda, right? He has to give at least two because there is a document that says so. And that he owes coins, so that's got to be at least two. So in this case, where there is a loan document, and we said having a loan document is like helach, because the loan document creates a lien, and he can go and take that money. It's like he already has the money. It's like helach, and nevertheless, according to Rabbi Akiva, in this case of helach, when there's only two, one does have to make a vow. So we see that in the case of helach, one has to make a vow, and we consider it like modeh b'miksat. That's a challenge to Rav Sheshat, who said, in the case of helach, patur, one does not have to make a vow. Answer, lo le'olam emalach shetayim name patur. Vayte katani shalosh lapukeh med Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Damar modeh b'miksat atana have v'chayav kamash malan demeshiv abeda have upatur. No, we reject this inference that you made. In fact, according to Rabbi Akiva, even if he claimed two, the Levek claimed two, also he would not have to make a vow. Now, why did Rabbi Akiva talk about a case of three? Because he wanted to exclude the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who says that in a case of three, that's called modeh b'miksat, and he has to make a vow. And that's why Rabbi Akiva wanted to specifically to say, no, in that case, I think it's patur. But in fact, if it was only two, and it was helach, also it would be patur, and therefore this is consistent with Rav Sheshat. The answer that we just gave is not just that we're backing into it in order to solve the problem, to solve the question, but rather this is actually the best reading of the Baraita. It must be that Rabbi Akiva thinks one is not liable to make a vow, both when he admits to three and when he admits to two. Because if you would say that when he admits to two, he does have to make an oath, then how would it make sense that when he admits to three, he doesn't have to make an oath, according to Rabbi Akiva? Ha arume ka ma'arim, sabar I amina shetayim ba'ena ishtabu'e, ema shalosh de'ehve kemeshiv aveda ve'ipatar, ela shma'amina shetayim patur. Rather, a love would think of this follow trick, and he would say, if I admit to two, I'm gonna have to make a vow. I don't want to do that, so you know what, I'll admit to three. It's worth paying one extra coin, and then I won't have to make a vow, because I'll be like someone who is returning a lost item. And so then, if he's going to lie, instead of lying and saying two, he'll just lie and say I owe three and won't have to make a vow. Even thieves don't want to make a vow, and so that'll actually just make it easier for him to make a vow in such a case. So it's kind of be illogical to say you have to make a vow for two but not for three. So therefore we can conclude that according to Rabbi Akiva, it has to be the same. Three and two is the same, and since three he does make a vow, two also he does not have to make a vow. Now we answered this so well that we're going to turn the question back around. Ela kashya le Rabbi Chiya, according to Rabbi Chiya, who says that in a case of helach, one has to make a vow, and so here where there's a shtar, isn't that a case of like helach, and when there's two, when he admits to two, that should be like helach. And we just proved that according to the Rabbi Akiva, he does not have to make a vow in two when he admits to two, but according to the Rabbi Chiya, that's the case of helach, and he should have to make a vow. And the answer, two answers, as we said above, shana atam dekameh seyeh le'shetara. This case is different because the shtar says I owe sela'im, and the minimum of plural sela'im is two. So therefore, it's as if he has, if he had witnesses, if the lover had witnesses that he only owes two, we would not have to make a vow of modeh b'miksat. And so too, this is not a regular case. If there's no witnesses, no shtad at all, then when he says helach, even though he says helach, he has to make a vow. But here, even though you're right, it's like helach, but he also has proof to his side that he only owes two. That he owes those two, and therefore there's no vow. Or another answer, as we said before, this case involves a lien on land, and whenever either the denial or the admission is based on a lien on land, one does not make a vow. That's a general rule, and we're about to see that more about that rule upcoming. And so, therefore, to Bichia and Rav Sheshet were successful in answering all the questions. One last question for today. This one is against Rav Sheshet. Metimor zutra bered Rav Nachman. Tano kelim vekarkaot vehoda bekelim vekafar bekarkaot hoda bekarkaot vekafar bekelim patur hoda miksad karkaot patur miksad kelim chayav. This is Mishnah in Shavuot that teaches, if a claimant comes and says that you owe me both movable vessels and also land, and then the defendant says, I admit I owe you movable vessels, but I don't owe you land. Or he says, I admit that I owe you land, but I deny that I owe you movable vessels. In all these cases, the defendant does not have to make a vow because of this principle that modeh b'miksat is not going to apply whenever land is involved, either as part of the denial or as part of the admission. However, if he admitted and also he is patur in the following case, if he admitted to part of the land and denied the rest, and denied the rest of the land and all of the vessels, also he is patur, because here again his admission is entirely land, and so since the admission is entirely land, then he does not have to make a vow. However, in this case, if he denies, if he admits some of the vessels, he says, yeah, I owe you some of the vessels, but the rest of the vessels and the land, I deny, then he will have to make a vow. And once he has to make a vow, he has to make a vow on the rest of the vessels and on the land also. Right, so that's the chidush here of this Mishnah, that he has to make a vow. And you can make a vow even in a case involving land, as long as there are vessels on both sides, that he admits to part of the vessels and denies part of the vessels, then he'll have to make a vow on everything that he denies, including land. Now, here's the inference that from which we're going to make a question. Tama de kelim vekarkaot de karka lav bat shevuahi. Ha kelim vechelim dumya de kelim vekarkaot hayav. The Gemara infers that the reason why one does not have to make a vow in the resha of this Mishnah is because it's two different, the claim was about two completely different categories of vessels and land. And land, one is not subject, does not subject one to making a vow. But let's say it was a similar equivalent case, and it was vessels and vessels, but it was the vessels was some were regular vessels, and others were vessels that were similar to land, then one would be liable. Now, what is that talking about? Where is there a case of vessels and land that is similar to vessels and vessels? Hechidameh, lav damar le helach ushmamina helach chayav. Is it not talking about a case of helach? So it was all vessels or cash money, the claimant says, you owe me 100, and the other said, no, I only owe you 50, and here it is, I put it in your hand, and see, I'm done with it. And so that's like land, because it's already given over, and yet one is only patur when it's totally different categories of kelim and actual land. But if it was something similar to land, then one would be liable. And this case of similar to land is helach. So we can infer from this Mishnah that a case of helach, one has to make a vow, challenge to Dav Sheshet. So who says in a case of helach, one does not not have to make a vow? Okay, this inference is a bit tenuous, but in any case, that's the question. Lo le'olam emalach kelim v'chelim name patur v'hadi katani kelim v'karkot hakamash malan hoda b'miksat kelim chayav af al hakarkaot. No, in fact, this inference is wrong, and I could say, in fact, if it was a case of vessels and vessels, that was similar to land, like a case of Helach, also he would not be liable, like Rav Sheshat says. So why does the Mishnah talk about vessels and land and not tell me the bigger chidush of vessels and Helach vessels? Wants to teach me the Sefa, that when someone admits to some of the vessels and denies the rest of the vessels and land, then he has to make a vow, and once you have to make a vow on the vessels, you have to make a vow also on all of the land. And even though land by itself would not require a vow. That's what it's coming to teach. But then we say, no, we don't need this Mishnah to teach that. You're teaching me the basic law of binding, that once you're liable to something, then we bind another oath. Once you're liable for some of the partial vessels, then you bind an oath. Also to for the land. Tanena, we know that already from another Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin that says, Zokikin nechasin she'en lahem achrayut et hanechasim she'yesh lahen achrayut lishaba alehen. That land that is not used as a guarantee, meaning movable items, can require, bind land that has that is used as a guarantee, property that is used as a guarantee, meaning land, to make a vow on them. So you see the Mishnah right there. He tells us already that you make a vow on land because of movables. So we already know that. I would not need this Mishnah to teach us this. And so therefore, how could you tell me I used Kelim and Karkaot to teach me the Sefa? I already know the law of the Sefa, and therefore the inference should be good, and it would be a challenge to Rav Sheshat. And we answer, Hacha Ikar Hatam Agav Gerara Nasba. In fact, the Mishnah in Shavuot is the main one. That's where we're learning it in the first place. That's why I need it here. Whereas the one in Kiddushin, that's the side point. Since it was talking about that subject, it mentioned, oh, by the way, this is a law. So you can't tell me I already know it from Kiddushin. Kiddushin is secondary to Shavuot, and that's why I need it for Shavuot, and therefore that inference that you made is not valid. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen v'amen.